Welcome to this week's Resisting the Dragon's Beast podcast. I'm Pastor Michael Zarling with Pastor Peter Hagen. We want to thank everyone who was listening to and downloading our last week's podcast and then watching it on YouTube, because it's probably the most popular YouTube video, over 300 views at this point. So please keep sharing and commenting and so forth. So before we get started too, Peter, I wanted to say that today when we're recording is Thursday, and I was reading to our early childhood campus students, preschool through second graders, and two of the teachers made my day because they picked Dr. Seuss books for me to read. They know I like Dr. Seuss, and the kindergarten teacher knows that I love to read Fox and Sox because I get to read it as fast as I can about beetle battles.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth.
Yeah, fantastic book, although Dr. Seuss was a deplorable human being, but he knew how to write a good rhyme. Not to ruin Dr. Seuss for you, but I will rain on that parade every single time.
Do not rain on my parade. Yeah. All right, so we are in the middle of chapter 10, page 187. The subtitle, Surrendering Rights in Exchange for Security. Before we get into that page, Peter, what is the difference between a monarchy, a tyranny, communism, democracy, and a democratic republic?
Oh, man.
So what is a monarchy?
We'll break all this down. Monarchy is generally described as a familial succession, like from parent to child. And so Henry VIII has to have a son so that son can then be on the throne. And he had to, work with four different women and create his own church in order to get a son. I don't even remember if he got a male heir or not. But monarchy is the people at the top are the ruling family, as opposed to dictatorship. The way we typically describe that is that the dictatorship usually has the flavor of military power, that somebody uses military power and force to force their way and then to be also the final say. And so a good example of that is probably Vladimir Putin. He'd be a good example in the modern day of somebody who is the final authority and who has the authority and the ability to put out of a hotel window, no matter where you happen to be living at the time. When we're talking about then like communism is an economic system that usually takes on a political system that portrays itself as something democratic. But it's as democratic as the dictatorship in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was reelected in Iraq and he was elected with 99% of the vote. We all know that wasn't an actual vote. When we're talking about communism and we're talking about the politics, the political side, the political organization that goes along with it, it is usually some form of democracy that often degrades into some form of a dictatorship. We see that especially with Joseph Stalin. He was a dictator, and ostensibly there was some people voting to agree with whatever he did, but they didn't really have a choice. And then finally, when we get a democracy, is where everybody has a voice. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a representative democracy, or a republic, where republic has a smaller number of people. It's not an oligarchy, although it often degrades into an oligarchy, which is the rule by few. A republic is supposed to be representative rule, where one person represents the voice of 100 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people or something like that. So then a demo, and that can take on various shades of implementation, I suppose, but a democratic republic then, as we have it in our constitution, is that we operate on the voting level, on the personal level, as a democracy, where it isn't based on your family and whether you are a lord or a vassal or anything like that, but that each person has a vote and that we vote in people who then represent us in the government. And then the different branches of the government balance each other out in our system.
See, I knew
so
you
there's,
were like
there's substantial overlap.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's substantial overlap, but it can be helpful to distinguish between economic systems and political systems.
And the reason I bring it up, because we're going to be talking about these kind of things as we go on in this chapter, but to understand that the wisdom of our founding fathers, that, you know, they had seen tyrannies and monarchies in the past, and they didn't want that. And democracy is not a good form, because that's just mob rule. You get enough people and you can, you know, do anything, even though it's not the wise thing.
Democracy like requires an educated populace. And even though a lot of people are involved, that means that a lot of people are involved. And then you see this in churches sometimes. We've got a meeting upon a meeting upon a meeting before we can even bring the proposal to the next group above that. It bogs things down. And in that regard, like a monarchy or a dictatorship is very efficient, but generally not for the good of the people.
Right. And, you know, I think I equate a democratic representative or democratic republic to the way we do the church, that we don't want to have a meeting all the time with all the people for everything that we do. And so that's why we have it set up in our congregation. You have a church council, and then we set it up when we merge that we have an executive committee, the four guys along with the pastors, to make the really quick decisions, just, you know, make a decision, move on. And for the really big things, we want to have open forums to discuss something, and then a week or two later have the vote. And that would be like, you know, bringing something to the voters, get their will of the people before, you know, might be even meet polling and so forth before you take the actual vote. But it bogs things down. And one of the things that I really focused on when we were working on the Constitution for our newly merged congregation was to take out of our Constitution four quarterly meetings, voters meetings every year. Because I remember biking with a local pastor a while ago, and he said, well, I got to get back, Michael, because we've got to have a voters meeting tonight. I said, why? He goes, well, it's our quarterly meeting. They didn't have anything that they had to vote on, but that was part of their Constitution. Whereas we're like, I was in the mindset of, if we don't have anything important to talk about, let's not talk about it. But thinking of this too, in terms of the book, because I have so many different references like this, more of the wisdom of our founding fathers, besides the representative democracy, is also the three-ring circus. And you think of the three-ring circus from Schoolhouse Rock, that you've got the three branches of the government, and they each have their own roles, or they're supposed to. You know, the legislative branch, the Congress, they're supposed to create the laws. Then the court is supposed to interpret the laws, and then you have the executive branch that is supposed to implement the laws. But you can see, as you study history, that we have gotten more and more away from that, and you see the executive branch creating laws through mandates. You have the courts legislating from the bench, and then you see the legislative branch not doing anything, and you see things breaking down, and then it will always become more tyrannical. We'll see that with one of the quotes from Thomas Jefferson. Anything more on that, Peter?
There is a fascinating case before the Supreme Court right now. I don't remember the names. I don't remember all the details, but the gist of it is, there's a lot of people who have jumped in on both sides, you know, filing some amici briefs, however you say that. That is basically a test case on to what degree do government agencies have the ability to create rules and regulations for within their agency's purview. And so, you know, whether that is the EPA, the DNR, the Bureau of Land Management, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the DEA, a lot of these people, a lot of these groups that are supposed to be the subject matter experts on that area, but then they can define things within that area, which, you know, at first we're like, oh, let the experts handle it. And it's a fantastic ploy for our representatives, because then they can say, you know, it's out of my hands, and they just define it over there. And then the representative doesn't get flack from his constituents or her constituents because of this definition that was undertaken by this bureaucratic organization. And the case before the Supreme Court is going to test, and it'll be really interesting, especially from the conservative justices, how far they want to take this. For instance, one of the things that has come up regularly over the last few years is elements of a firearm, like what constitutes a firearm. And the ATF wanted to say that if you possess anything that is part of a firearm, that constitutes a firearm. And then if you have it, it demonstrates constructive intent. So if you're a hunter, a sport shooter who needs a spring for your firearm, and you have a spring in your cabinet at home, well, that they could say constitutes a firearm, and then you cannot bring it across state lines or transfer it to somebody else without going through their paperwork. There are a lot of implications on this, and we'll hear from them when they rule on it at the end of this session, which would be in June. And what it comes down to is that for a long time, our House of Representatives has not actually been making laws on and writing laws and debating laws on some of these things, but rather just kicking it over to the whatever bureaucratic organization is in charge of that area. And then they can say, not my circus, not my monkeys, not my problem. It's over there. And they can still get reelected and not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, so more about that at another time.
Yeah, a couple things on that. I'm sure, Peter, all of us, me included, all of our listeners, we're all going to be waiting with bated breath for that Supreme Court ruling, just like you are. Talking
was
about
that sarcasm?
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Okay.
Like you were saying, of just passing it off to these different organizations, isn't that exactly what President Biden did in 2021? I don't remember the government group, that he tasked with saying, all right, now you have to enforce this with businesses, that the employees of a business of 100 employees or more have to get the COVID vax. But he knew it was illegal for him and the federal government to do it. And so, like you said, he tasked a smaller group to do this.
And that's kind of the frustrating part when we talk about different forms of government. Not to go too far down this, but I'll have this part and then be done on that, is we look at Russia and we say, oh, it's a dictatorship with a rubber stamp Congress and then all these Russian oligarchs who are billionaires from skimming off the top of all the federal monies and misusing them to buy their yachts and go around the world. And so you look at it, it's a dictatorship, but it's an oligarchy. And to a certain extent, we have a similar arrangement here, where the lobbyists, you know, the 10 richest counties in the nation are surrounding Washington, D.C. That tells me that these lobbyists and these companies and these organizations are really funneling a lot of money to try to get laws that are favorable to them. You know, look, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, just look up Intuit, the people who make TurboTax, and how everybody else in the world can just, you know, call the government and say, here, and the government will tell you, here's what you owe, and then you pay a check. And you and I, we have to pay, you know, $30, $70 tax software if you want the cheap route. And then you tell the government what you owe, and then they're like, no, actually you owe this. And you're like, you knew all this time exactly what I owe for taxes. But that's because of lobbying. And in that regard, then the government also derives some benefit from private organizations, because they can say, well, we didn't restrict your right to free speech. We just told Twitter to restrict the, you know, how far this got shared. We told Facebook to, but that's a private organization. No, they were operating at the behest of the government. And so it's a way of saying we are giving you your right to speak in the public square, but then going around and working with the businesses, which is oligarchy, ruled by a few, in order to restrict those rights in a practical way and say it's just a business decision.
Yeah,
and, did you know that this chapter is going to be so much of a rant?
Well, I knew I would get you on a rant just by asking that first question. But all of this ranting, it's really leading up to this question of what does it mean that in America we are a nation of people ruled by the consent of the governed? So I'll let you answer that one, Peter, in a moment. So what does it mean that we are a country that is ruled by the consent of the government? Governed, not the government, the governed, because my answer is the founding fathers did not want a few people making the rules for the many, just making those decisions. One of the things that I believe that we have forgotten as Christian citizens, and I think it's also true of us as pastors, we have forgotten that we are the government, that the government serves us. God says that through the Apostle Paul in Romans 13. The government is God's servant for our good. They are to serve us. But we have come into the mindset over years that we are serving the government. And that's totally wrong. And that's why I think this book and these podcasts and so forth are so important to help correct us and then turn us around to get us back to that idea, the government serves us at the will of the governed. Now, go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, that idea of the idea of the consent of the governed, it goes along with political theory of like the 18th century and a little bit earlier, especially like John Locke, I think is the name to follow through with that. That the consent of the governed means that and they are choosing a particular form of government, that it isn't chosen by the force of those who have the force of the army behind them, and it's not chosen by the force of those who have lords and ladies and titles to their names. It's chosen by the consent of the governed, that the people are actually choosing this. And that dovetails together with the American concept of a personal right, like the Bill of Rights, are rights that are preserved from the government, reserved to the people. And what we don't talk about as much, and maybe we should, at least in an ethical sense, not necessarily in a constitutional sense, is that with the right comes the responsibility. You know, what is that? Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes, very good, Uncle Ben.
There you go. With rights comes responsibility. And maybe we are lazy enough that if somebody will say, well, I'll take care of your responsibilities for you, then and you can just keep your right. That doesn't actually work in practice. If somebody is like, well, you know, I'll speak up on your behalf, and you don't have a freedom to speak on your behalf. Actually, you do, and you have a responsibility to speak up. That the whole idea of our government as it is constituted is based on an informed and educated citizenry that is involved in the government. That if the people, the governed, aren't mentally plugged into what's actually going on, what are the issues, then they will not participate. And then the idea, that the government rules with the consent of the governed can't actually be carried out in practice, because the people don't even know enough to consent to whatever government is being exercised.
Yeah, and to this too, I think it's important for us to remember that when the government is not following this founding document of the consent of the governed, then they are going against our founding and highest document. And so that's important for us as Christian citizens and as pastors. I quote Thomas Jefferson in the middle of page 188. He says, "Whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is the right of the people to abolish or alter it and to institute new government. That's pretty strong. So when our government is not following the consent of the government governed, then he's saying we need to abolish that government and start over, because that's exactly what they did. It's important for us to remember we are citizens. We are not subjects. And that's why I started this discussion with a monarchy and a tyranny and so forth, because then we are subjects. But that's not us in America. God bless the founding fathers with a certain amount of wisdom to do something that had never been done in the history of the world, a representative democracy in this grand experiment of the United States of America, to try something brand new and to show that we are not those subjects. And then also having this crazy idea that all of us as American citizens are created equal.
Yeah, and that sentence on page 188 from the Declaration of Independence, if you haven't read that in the last year, you should reread it every 4th of July so you at least understand what it is that Jefferson and the other guys were writing. But also, the entire Declaration is, it basically condenses their political philosophy, and they don't abandon that when they set about to forming a constitution, 15 to 18 years later, that is still involved as part of their thinking. And so I say, if you need a reading recommendation this week, try the Declaration of Independence.
There you go. And then on page 189, I quote from Numbers 14. So the people are grumbling and they say, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, if only we had died in this wilderness, why is the Lord bringing us to this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our children will be taken as captives. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let's put someone in charge and return to Egypt. Who's going to give us meat to eat? We remember the fish we ate in Egypt, free of charge, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our lives are wasting away. We have nothing at all to look at except this manna. So you kind of touched on this a little bit, Peter, with your quote of Uncle Ben to Peter Parker of with great response with, what was it now?
Great power.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Oh, I feel so bad. Yeah, with great power comes great responsibility. Why is freedom so hard?
Oh, yeah. That's a good question. Freedom, because, part of it is that we understand freedom, that we exercise freedom for ourselves, that we have to be the ones who exercise it. And yet the exercising of that freedom will have benefit, or ought to have benefit, for our neighbor. Generally the American concept of freedom is, this is what I have and you cannot infringe upon my rights in this particular area. Whereas the approach and understanding of Christian freedom is the reverse of that, that I am now free to serve my neighbor, that I have an obligation of love to my neighbor, and that I have been set free from the obligation of the law to demonstrate love for my neighbor. Of freedom is difficult to maintain because we have the responsibility of exercising that freedom. And too often we think too highly of human nature, and we want to attribute good motives to other people and say, well, it's not that bad and it's not a big deal and it's just this once. And what it is we're lazy enough to acquiesce and say, you know what, it's not my circus, not my problem. I'm not going to worry about that today. And it would be very easy, and in some regards we are there, depending on which one of the 10 First Amendment, 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights you're talking about, but it'd be very easy to end up with what we call a paper right. And so where this comes up most often, I guess, is when we talk, there is more than enough to read. And but then there's also other constitutions around the world. And so in Mexico, the Mexican Constitution has a right for the people to keep and bear arms. It's very similar to the United States, except it's a paper right, meaning that they can't actually exercise it. The government has regular citizenry. And so you can have a firearm in your home if you want. You can have it personally on your person in some cases. But in most cases, it's just going to be expensive paperweight because you can't actually get the things that go with the firearm, as an example. And so when we talk about freedom, it's difficult to maintain because despite all the best efforts, you can't write something so well that you don't have to think about it anymore. And we as humans, we are much more likely to let somebody else do the thinking, let somebody else do the work. And especially if it makes me feel more secure, better about myself, then I'm all for that.
Yeah.
And kind of like right. Other quote from Franklin, that those who would give up freedom in exchange for a little security deserve neither security nor freedom.
Right. And with this, you know, I think of back when I was in college, Northwestern College in Watertown, Wisconsin. Where did you go to college, Peter?
I went to a college at Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota.
All right. So, yeah, you're a different era than I am. So I don't know what there was to do in Mankato. There was nothing to do in
very different era.
There was nothing to do in Watertown in the weekend for college age students that were underage. So we couldn't go to the bar or anything like that. So we would go to the video store back when they had those things. And there'd be a group of guys, and we'd spend half an hour, maybe an hour, looking at these movies. What two do we want to get? And we could never decide on what to do because we had our freedom to choose whatever movies we wanted, but we ended up watching like the Blues Brothers or Ghostbusters, things we've seen a dozen times before this because we knew they were good and we could never decide. Or if you ask, you get a group of people together, you know, what kind of ice cream do we want to get? You know, I would like something with peanut butter or Oreos and chocolate and so forth, but someone else, like my girls and my wife, they all know that they'll get mint because I won't eat anything with mint. My daughter Abby asked the other day, there was a Shamrock Shake and it looked really good. And I said, yeah, I'll get one of those if you can take the mint out. But what happens if you can only have one flavor of ice cream? You settle on vanilla because no one wants to, everyone's afraid of upsetting other people. We are afraid of imposing our freedoms on other people. Like you said, we don't want to be responsible. We prefer being told what to do. And it's important for us because we can be very naive as Christians that those who hate us, they have no problem restricting or removing our freedoms.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to get into the bottom of page 189. Now, Peter, you've seen Shawshank Redemption, right?
I have.
All right. That's good. I was going to question other things about you if you hadn't seen Shawshank Redemption. Like I say in the bottom of the book.
My life is complete.
That's right. Like I say in the bottom of the page there, that it was not a popular movie. It tanked at the box office, but now it's viewed as one of the top movies of all time. But in the movie, and I'll read from page 189, Brooks Hatlin had been in prison since 1909. After spending so many decades in prison, Brooks grew so accustomed to living on the inside that he didn't remember how the outside world worked. After being released on good behavior, Brooks had a very hard time readjusting to his new freedom. Brooks ended up writing a final letter to Andy and Red at the prison before committing suicide by hanging himself. The letter read in part, quote, I have trouble sleeping at night. I have bad dreams like I'm falling. I wake up scared. Sometimes it takes me a while to remember where I am. Maybe I should get me a gun and rob the food way so they'd send me home. I could shoot the manager while I was at it, sort of like a bonus. I guess I'm too old for that sort of nonsense anymore. I don't like it here. I'm tired of being afraid all the time. I'm decided not to stay. I doubt they'll kick up any fuss. Not for an old crook like me. And so here is someone that feels trapped by his freedoms. And that's like the children of Israel. They were trapped by their freedom. They want to go back to their slavery, back to Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not only that, but the children of Israel, they obviously have selective memories, and they don't like the idea of needing to trust in God versus sitting around pots of food, forgetting the fact that they were enslaved and dealing with the Egyptians. And in that regard, it's like whether it's choosing movie, choosing what to eat, anything that, you know, if you want to draw from like gardening and planting as an example, there's this avenue of gardening design called permaculture, which basically tries to capture energy from the environment and then use it. And they say, you know, the restrictions of the site will provide all the creativity that you need. And so, in other words, that if a site is a perfect site for planting a garden or a food forest or raising chickens or anything like that, it is much more difficult to come up with an efficient design. But if you have a site that is constrained, where, you know, it's clay soil and only gets a little bit of sun and it gets really cold, and then you've got your constraints in place, then you can make a much more creative design. And in that regard, when we have freedom, we've got the freedom to do so. And it's discussions, you know, like your book that say, here are actually the box that we should be coloring in. And here's what we need to be focusing in, instead of just all sitting around and basking, oh, don't we have all this freedom? Isn't this beautiful? But then not actually applying that freedom when it's on us to exercise that freedom.
Yeah, and you touched on this in the beginning there about trusting in God or trusting in government. That's important for us to understand, that we have two institutions that we're going to trust in, either God or God who created, or the government, which is created by God. And we are now a nation that mostly does not believe in God, and therefore it's a nation that is only going to trust in the government. Again, that's important for us to understand. So I quote Frederick Douglass here on page 190. So Peter, what does he mean when he says, the limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress?
That's pretty good. Frederick Douglass, of course, you know, he had been a slave and then he earned his freedom. And when fight against slavery and speak against it, that the limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. If you think of it in terms of like the schoolyard bully, he can push around anybody, just that there'll be some kid that will push him back or kick him back or something like that. That the tyrant, in a sense, uses force and is hides behind that force as a coward. And when somebody stands up to them, that's really, you know, when has somebody had enough that they stand up? When do you push back against the schoolyard bully? That the bully is going to stop when somebody actually stands up and says, you know what, I'm tired of this, I'm not going to take it anymore, and give some pushback.
Yeah. And so the next part is we're going to talk about some of that pushback. And the first example is the Freedom Convoy. So in short, there was the Freedom Convoy in Canada that they were trying to hold the Canadian government to its own laws. So there is the Canadian Constitution that has a Charter of Rights that's, you know, kind of analogous to the U.S. Bill of Rights. And these protesters believed that they had their rights removed. And so they were trying to be a curb to the government, holding the government accountable to their own laws. And so the truckers parked in downtown Ottawa, clogging roads and stopping traffic. And it was a peaceful protest. So, Peter, what are some things that we can learn from the Freedom Convoy?
We lived in Ottawa for a couple of years, and I took our dog walking on many of those streets. What is interesting was that people, you know, there's a group of people who are very influential, but generally overlooked in society. When you look at somebody who are the rich, the powerful, the influential, we think of Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. We don't think of the guys and the women who are driving the trucks to get the fuel there or bringing the food or anything like that. But what they did was they protested in a peaceful way, and they said, you know what, this is too far. We need to have somebody stand up and say, you know, the government doesn't actually have the right to require these things of us, and that it isn't an emergency. And the interesting thing is that Prime Minister Trudeau tried to have the Ottawa police come and arrest all these truckers, and by and large the Ottawa police said no, that they weren't doing anything illegal and improper, until the parliament then passed a new statute or an emergency declaration, I forget the exact terminology of what it was, where they then required that the streets be cleared. And it was kind of interesting, a couple of things there, that the Canadians stood up for what they believed in, that the, you know, generally the truckers were of a somewhat more independent mindset than, you know, perhaps other Canadians. The scary part, you know, if you want to go down that road a little bit, is that the truckers, especially when it started, weren't doing anything illegal until the government, after they were protesting for a while, declared that form of protest was illegal. And there were certain, you know, Canadian citizens who donated to support this trucking convoy, you know, to make sure that these people had food and could purchase diesel fuel while they were there. They donated while it was a legal protest before the government outlawed it. And then after the government outlawed it, then they had their bank accounts frozen. So even though it was a legal donation at the time. And so, you know, where does this all come from and kind of come together? That we need, you know, generally speaking, we should have an awareness of what it is that we're dealing with, whether as a citizen, as a Christian, or both. That the rights that we have are rights that are for the individual, and that we shouldn't, you know, necessarily be a gadfly, you know, making a stink at every turn, but we should be very attentive to stand up when it's easier before it gets more difficult. And also being willing to bear the cross or the ramifications, because the rules don't actually depend on you, that you could be completely right and you could still sit in prison for a while and have your life ruined through court cases that would eventually be ruled in your favor. Just to have that as a context.
So a couple of things that I picked up.
Original question, obviously.
some things that I pick up from the Freedom Convoy, that was a question, Peter, is how, and this is the middle of page 191, Jason Kenney, the premier of Alberta, Canada, announced that several of the COVID-19 restrictions and mandates would end quickly because of the Freedom Convoy. Mm-hmm. So then I asked the question, with how quickly those restrictions were lifted, did the science change or did the politics change? And then Trudeau, you know, he said, because of the standoff with these truckers, mandates are the way to avoid more restrictions. You know that, and I said, that's like saying restricting your freedoms is the way to avoid more restrictions of your freedoms. It didn't make any sense.
The beatings. The beatings will continue until morale improves.
And I think one of the big things with this is that these truckers, they're independent. They don't have a lot of oversight from companies and so forth. They can go to another company and so forth. And they were able to stand up for those who couldn't stand for themselves. And that's something we need to understand, that when there are mandates and restrictions coming down, and maybe a single mom with two kids at home, she can't stand up. She has to go to work. Or a dad who's providing for his family, he has to be the one to stand up. But maybe grandpa, who's retired or close to retirement, he can be the one to stand up. And so here, these truckers, they did not approve of the vax mandate. And so they were standing up for other people who couldn't stand for themselves. That's the seventh commandment. I just taught that in seventh grade catechism class, of helping others to keep and improve their property and means of income. When we stand up to things that are wrong, not just illegal, but just morally wrong, that's a good thing. You know, we are a curb to the government. And then I think of some things that have just happened recently, and you maybe, Peter, you know of other ones, but there's another trucker convoy, and these are the truckers for Trump, that there are a number of truckers who are refusing to deliver to New York City because they view what has been happening with President Trump, with all of these cases and being found guilty in New York City of and having to pay a fine for $300 million and so forth. And they said, that's wrong. That is not morally correct. And they said, we can go and go get loads and deliver them elsewhere. Our employers don't care, as long as we're doing the work and keeping ourselves busy. And so they're trying to hold the state of New York accountable and saying, what you just did, that was wrong. And then over in the European Union, there's the governments are trying to force farmers off their land, these little farmers, and then bring in big farms. And they're imposing all kinds of restrictions because of climate change and so forth. And so you got to watch the videos. And I even found it hard to find these things. I get my news usually from the Daily Wire and not the Beep. And I didn't see anything on those conservative sites. I knew I wasn't going to find anything on any other sites like Google or DuckDuckGo or other news organizations. I found it on Instagram, that I followed a couple of places where they're showing these videos of the farmers stopping traffic with their huge tractors on both sides of the two-lane freeway, and how they're taking their hay, and then they're setting it on fire in the median between the roads. They're doing things like taking their manure and then using the manure spreader and then dumping it onto the government buildings and so forth. And as Christians, as we see these things, I say, oh, that's wrong. You know, they're stopping traffic. They're setting things on fire. They're ruining property. Except, like you said before, Peter, and I say that several times in the book, we need to have a little courage now, or we need a lot of courage later. That they're having this courage now before it gets too bad. It's like the boiling pot. Eventually, if you don't do anything, the pot boils over. You know, you leave that lid on long enough when you're cooking your noodles and so forth, eventually it just boils over, and now you've got a big issue. And it's the same thing here, that if we just let things go, eventually the government will become more tyrannical, or people are going to finally have enough, and then it's not going to be resistance, it will be revolt. And so what I see with the truckers and the truckers for Trump, with the Freedom Convoy, with these farmers in the EU, they're all trying to resist now before it becomes revolt.
Yeah, I haven't followed up. I've purposely tried to avoid all the Trump cases. I have no particular pony in that race. It would be interesting if that Truckers for Trump movement does gain any momentum, or if it just kind of fizzles out, especially now that it sounds like Nikki Haley has dropped out of the race for the Republican nomination. And, you know, is that going to change things? Because now it is thrown into another court battle regarding, you know, can somebody who was accused of some of these crimes even allow his name to stand on ballots in some of these cases?
I think they're mainly protesting that one specific court case in New York where he's fined $300 million for doing something that is totally legal.
So, oh yeah, was that the one where he proposed his business assets and then he was given a loan from a bank
yes.
that looked at his assets and agreed with him?
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. The last question for this episode is, yeah, should the government serve as the arbiter of truth? Should the government serve as the arbiter of truth, Peter? Why or why not?
Oh, my heart. No.
Oh, okay. Why not?
Period. You know, the best they can offer is what is truth. The government doesn't exactly have a good track record of telling us what is truthful and what is not. You know, it's truthful if you go back 30 years that it is healthy for you to eat between 6 and 11 servings of grains and pastas every day. And that is the way the food pyramid is shaped. That is the truth according to the government. But let's just flip that upside down now, because we're beginning to realize that maybe isn't the truth. That human reason, even at its best, can only grope about to try to come up with an idea that justifies its own reasoning. I guess that's the bottom line, that they don't have the tools to come up with the truth. The best they can come up with is something that is a moral truth. But even then, you know, it was President Obama and his executive order that changed the wording of Title IX to apply not to the sex of a person, but the gender of a person. And that was almost 15 years ago by this point. So I don't, I only trust one person for truth, and that's Jesus Christ, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So a couple of things on this from my viewpoint is, when you trust the government for the truth, that leads into those, well, the books that you and I talk about pretty often of George Orwell. Think of the disinformation board of, 1984. And, you know, all of a sudden, well, there are three big nations in that book. And, well, these two are at war. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, we've never been at war with that nation. We've always been at war with this other nation. So they're just changing it. And then I was thinking too, another George Orwell book of Animal Farm, where you've got the rules painted on the side of the barn. And then eventually more and more of those rules get changed and the animals can't read. So they don't realize that things are changing. But those were governments that were in charge and they could just say what was the truth. Our own government, was it maybe 2 years ago, tried to create their own disinformation board, but they call it the Ministry of Truth. And what you mentioned is the way the government then utilizes social media, so that Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all of those places can say, well, that's wrong, and then, or YouTube, and then take it down. Mm-hmm. And also I think of what Ronald Reagan said. You know, he was talking specifically about the Soviet Union, but he said, trust but verify. And we are called to trust our government. But if we only trust without ever verifying it, then we become naive. It's like, I remember I had a couple of police officers in our congregation years ago, and they would just shake their heads at me. And, you know, Pastor, you are just so naive. Because I would want to see the good in people, but they're seeing the worst in people. And I think a lot of times as pastors and Christian citizens, we want to see the good in our government, but we forget that they're sinful people. It's not a neutral institution. It's either doing God's will, and we forget that it can also be doing Satan's will. So a big part of what I'm thinking of, I'm toying with right now for the sequel to this book, is about testing the spirits. That's what the Apostle Paul says. Test the spirits. And who are those spirits? Well, Paul says in Ephesians 6, verse 12, you know, the spiritual rulers, those are, you know, the demons and so forth that are infecting people with our sinful natures, but also the spiritual authorities that are in institutions and governments and so forth. And so test everything. Anything else that you want to talk about with that, Peter?
Definitely. Not particularly.
Okay.
I think that is a fairly good summation.
All right. Well, then we will wrap it up here. And thank you for listening to this episode. If you've missed any of the previous episodes, please go back and listen to them, watch them on YouTube, and then please keep on sharing all of this information. Lord's blessings on your day and week, and we look forward to getting back together with all of you next week.